had that many no's and doors shut and, you know, that this isn't the right time for you. But that just kind of drives you more.
Welcome to season two of the Super Podcast. In these conversations, we're bringing you even more insights from successful fellows and advice from leaders across the UK research landscape. I'm Nikhil Ahluwalia, and this is brought to you by the British Junior Cardiologist Association in partnership with the BHF CRC. Please check out our YouTube channel for extra content and the conversation videos. Just search for Super on YouTube. Pleased today to be joined by Dr. Claire Lawson, who's an NIHR Advanced Fellow and Associate Professor at the Cardiovascular Sciences and Real World Evidence Unit at the University of Leicester. Her research work has been funded by the Florence Nightingale Trust, NIHR Wellcome Trust, and the BHF. She's been awarded some of the most prestigious awards for her research work, including the 2020 Circulation HF Paper of the Year and the ESC Heart Failure Nurse Investigator Award in 2021. So Claire has very kindly agreed to share her perspective and take time out of her busy schedule to join us on the podcast today. So I'm very grateful you can join us.
Thank you. Yeah, and I'm really excited to be here. So thank you for inviting me.
So after our first series, we had some comments from nurses who wanted to hear more about other multidisciplinary professionals and their journey into academia. So could you start by taking us through how you entered into research, your PhD, and what made you go down that route?
So I completed my training in the mid-1990s. And as a time at that, for a nurse, you sort of qualified with a diploma. But I was always quite studious at school, and my siblings had gone off to university, and I was really sort of wanting to progress academically. So alongside my nursing role, I decided to embark on a degree, so a degree in health studies. And this is my real first exposure to research. I guess that was my first exposure to quantitative science, which I found that I got a real aptitude for, I really enjoyed. So after completing that degree, I then continued in my clinical role, but got a bit of itchy feet. I wanted to do more, so I embarked on a master's degree. And both the degree and the master's I did in my own time alongside a full-time clinical career. So alongside the master's, I was starting to get a real passion for education and learning, and I developed one of the first clinical education roles within cardiology. And from there, moved into full-time nurse lecturing at a university. Once I got there, I realised that, you know, one or two individuals, not many at that time in nursing, had actually got PhDs. And I thought this was really sort of golden chalice of academic development and that I would like to try and work towards. So I embarked on looking at, you know, ways I could try and undertake a PhD. But given that I'd spent 16 years working in a clinical role and sort of studying in my own time, be evening away at nights and sort of detriment that has to family, really. I really wanted to focus on the PhD with some support in order to take myself away from my full-time role in order to do that. So that was when I started looking for other avenues of support. And it just sort of coincided nicely with the NIHR sort of getting on board with thinking about trying to motivate and promote nurses and allied health professionals into research. So they just launched a scheme that was specifically focused on nursing at AHPs. And this sort of introduced me to the potential of fellowships. So I started then to look across different fellowship schemes to see where I might find that support. And so yeah, it was sort of a long journey in, but once I sort of got the bit between my teeth, then I wanted to go. So that's what I did.
How were the clinical teams that you were working with and your seniors at that time, how supportive were they when you expressed that interest in doing quite a lot of work alongside a full-time clinical workload?
Yeah, I mean, I think with the degree and the master's degree, it was kind of okay because I did that in my own time, so it didn't impact on work at all. But when I moved into wanting to undertake a PhD, I found that the professional support was a little bit challenging. So in nursing, it's quite different. So there's no clear clinical academic pathway for nurses, or there wasn't at the time. And it's now sort of emerging and developing, but we're still not there yet. So I think that sometimes research is seen as sort of the second class citizen to the main clinical or educational role that you have, and it's sort of taking away from you from the main business of what you're employed to do. So there wasn't really the support in order to be seconded out for 3 years. I mean, it was like, well, who's going to do your work in those 3 years if you go and you know, take on this PhD? So there was quite a few challenges initially. I was one of the first nurses to want to step outside of work in order to take the PhD. Everyone else that I knew that had done a PhD had done it in their own time over 7 or 8 years, you know, sort of struggling along. But I wanted something different. But sort of breaking down those organisational barriers was quite a challenge, I have to say.
And have things changed now? What do you think the process would be for someone who's listening to this, who's interested in doing a PhD now?
I think the time is now. I think that there is a lot of interest now in motivating nurses and allied health professionals to engage in academia. And so there are certainly sort of support mechanisms there in terms of funding. There's many more schemes now that nurses and HPs can engage with. I think one of the ongoing challenges, which is sort of work in process, is that there's no real structure beyond the PhD. So clinical academic pathways for nurses are not well defined. And that sort of visibility of where this may lead beyond the PhD is a kind of still a bit of a stumbling block, but it is work in progress.
Could you tell us a little bit about the type of research you do now and how your clinical experience has helped you become a better researcher?
Yeah, so the kind of research I do now, I'm an epidemiologist, so I look at large data sets to understand sort of conditions, understand some of the wider determinants of health, so that fits well in with the epidemiology. I think that my interest in this really started through moving as a nurse from a general setting to a specialist setting. And it was really exciting to move into cardiology. I mean, we could focus on a specific condition, delivering gold standard care, and that was all great. But coming from a general setting, I was quite struck really by the challenges that this posed on patients who had multiple conditions and that found themselves within a specialist setting. You know, there was this kind of ethos or undercurrent within cardiology. If it's not your heart, we can't fix it. So I was quite sort of starting to be interested in how this sort of led to impacts on patients in terms of fragmented care, communication challenges, and applying specific medical interventions in the context of different conditions, and also how patients could self-care. So that then led me to thinking about, well, how I might approach this question. And in clinical practice, we collect lots of data. So this brought me to then the epidemiology thinking, well, how could we use this data to understand on a larger scale what some of the influences or risk factors or determinants of patient outcomes might be who have multiple conditions. So that led me into the PhD pathway that I finally took.
Did you have any strong mentors or supervisors that you think really helped you along that way?
Yeah, I think that was absolutely crucial to my success and development, really. So coming from a nursing background within a nursing school, because I wanted to develop along a fellowship route, there was nobody really that had that experience available within nursing. So I had to step outside of nursing in order to find that. So I looked across the university to see who both had sort of a similar interest in my clinical area of things I wanted to look at, but also had a mentorship of fellows experience. So it had to be someone that would understand what it took in order to be successful at a fellowship. So in terms of supervisor, I found a supervisor in the medical school that had experience of fellowship development, who was key to my success at gaining a fellowship. But then also outside of that, because I was stepping outside of nursing, I then needed mentors that would support me both professionally and clinically and in terms of my career. So professionally, at that time, I wasn't really very well connected. I didn't really know who the key nurses were that are sort of doing this similar thing. So I took to the good old internet and searched for some of the key professors that were sort of working in a similar area. And I found two in Sweden that were doing some real trailblazing research, and just sort of contacted them via email very casually, you know, could we have a chat? Could we meet up? Expecting nothing in return. And, you know, within a month we'd met up, we'd had Skype calls, you know, and we're still collaborating to this day some 12 years later. So that was really fantastic. In terms of the career, the supervisor that I chose was very instrumental in thinking, you know, how you break down the political barriers, because this was a nurse wanting to engage on a fellowship journey with no clear clinical academic pathway beyond it. So that was really key in trying to understand what the possibilities might be, given this was a new and emerging area, really. So yeah, I don't think one size fits all. I think in terms of mentorship, you've got to think about the key areas that you want mentorship in, and perhaps there'll be different individuals that will support that more meaningfully, which is what I did. So I built a whole team around me, really, for different sort of targets that I wanted to achieve.
You mentioned breaking down the political barriers, that when you came into research, you were one of the first nurses doing such a PhD in full-time academic work. Was there much prejudice or challenges that you had to face because of that?
Yeah, I think there was multiple challenges, but you know, I am the living proof that you can overcome them. But I think that firstly, you know, I think given the fact that there's no clear pathway so visible to nurses, it's difficult to step off the role that you're doing, which I've already mentioned before. So if you're in a full-time role, you know, you've got to sort of argue with your managers and the people that are going to release you to do that work. So you've got to provide some form of rationale of how this will support your clinical role. So that's one of the first challenges. I think also, you know, it removes you from your comfort zone, things that you know well. In medicine, there's a clear academic progression from finishing the medical degree to moving forwards, which there just isn't in nursing. So we tend to come into nursing a lot later on. We've tend to have built up a clinical career, built up personal commitments, and it's very difficult to step off that to embark on full-time study unless you have fellowship funding, and that's quite competitive and quite challenging. So in terms of doing that, I had to sort of beat down various doors and argue why, you know, I should be released to do this and why I was the right person to do this and really sell it to the university. And I didn't have the same clinical complications because I'd moved out of clinical practice at that mm-hmm. time. So I'd moved into full-time education. But even within that, I had to sell why it was, you know, reasonable and a positive move for me to move outside of my education role for 3 years. And that took a lot of resilience. I mean, I had that many no's and doors shut and, you know, that this isn't the right time for you. But that just kind of drives you more, I think, sometimes. And you think, okay, well, I appreciate, you know, your viewpoint, but actually I disagree with it and I'm going to move forward and find, you know, a door that does open and says, yes, it will support you. So there is about probably 6 months to a year of finding that route and just building people around you and just keep on the same argument, really having a bit of tenacity and keep, you know, moving forward. I think at the time the nursing professor described it as dog with a bone, but I would say tenacity. So
great. What do you think organizations and groups can do more, or what would you like to see change over the next couple of years for nurses in the UK?
I think we've already started. So in terms of thinking of what a clinical academic pathway might look like for a nurse, because I think this has got to start from qualification, 10 years, 15 years into your career, when you're already established, then it's more difficult to step away and go out of your comfort zone to something you don't know. So actually threading a really more visible and strong research track through the training, so that nurses come out sort of research minded with some knowledge and skills, and then taking people who are really interested in academic development from that point, similar to the medical model where we integrate the academic development with the clinical development early on, and then have a clear trajectory beyond that. So, you know, integrate the education, integrate the learning, but then have clear pathways where, you know, nurses can become clinical academics, and it's a recognized pathway where they're recognised that people can then work towards. And these conversations have started. There are many different now bodies that are looking at and working on this. So it is work in progress, but I'd like to see that move forward a little bit quicker.
What do you think are the unique advantages or you find rewarding in an academic role versus the typical clinical role?
I think having that academic element to your career, whether it's integrated or whether it's standalone, gives you space to think. It gives you space to think. It gives you space to, you know, truly try and impact on patient care. Because clinically, obviously, you've got a very important role in impacting on patient care. But I think if you want to change practice or make things better or improve it, you just don't have the time when you're doing your sort of, you know, day-to-day role. We all know the NHS is under pressure. We all know that people are working every hour. So you don't really get, you might have many important questions that you want to ask and many different things you may want to change. You just don't have the time. So I think developing an academic role that provides you support and time to do that actually allows you then to really impact on practice in a different way. And I think nurses, you know, we are sort of stepping into what is a medical field in terms of research, but I think we have a unique perspective. We understand problems from a very broad perspective. You know, the very foundation of nursing is built on holism. So this means that we view problems in a different way through a multidimensional lens. We can help understand why this will work, who it will work, and at what time it will work. And so I think it's that bringing that sort of broader perspective to interventions and medicines and healthcare, actually, you know, well, we can't ignore it anymore. It's needed, it's wanted by the broad youth research community. And I think that's what we can offer as nurses.
Okay, great. Do you think that there is a benefit in terms of collaboration, and that any of the physicians listening to this may benefit from working with researchers from a different clinical background? Or do you think it is just based on your research capabilities, and that working with the best researchers is what's key, rather than looking for diversity?
No, I would say it's the diversity of clinical background that actually makes research work in the real world. So, and I think this is something that funders have got very much on board with in the past few years. So now there's a lot more focus on patient-centered research, patient-centered outcomes, understanding effectiveness as opposed to efficacy. You know, so research funders have got on board with this. So actually, working together and collaborating between professions gives it that multidimensional perspective that funders are after. So I don't think it's something we can ignore anymore. And I think, which is why I say the time is now for nursing, because we have that real contribution to make. So I don't think we should all be doing the same thing, but from different professions. I think we should all be bringing our unique perspective to research questions and answering them in a more rounded and a more robust way.
Great. And you've mentioned a lot of the key benefits and advantages of doing academic work. Is there any information or any advice that you wish you had been given right at the start of your journey that you would want to leave any nurses listening to this or watching this with?
Yeah, I think I've learned along the way. So when I first started, I was very naive, and there wasn't really anybody else to advise me specifically from my professional background. But I think learning along the way, you know, I can't say enough how important it is to keep those clinical networks, to reach out to people that you may feel won't want to engage, but actually people are human and they do want to engage. And I think no matter how junior you are, actually the most senior professor can still want to engage. And I think that, you know, so when you start out, build a big team around you. Don't just focus on one individual. Look for somebody that has experience in the things you want to achieve. That's not potentially just one person, that may be many people. And yeah, just keep that communication up, put yourself out there, you know, join committees, speak to people in the research field, and just keep connected, because it is very easy to feel isolated as a nurse doing research in a specific area. You may be isolated from your professional practice. In terms of my work, you know, I wanted to go into quantitative science and epidemiology. So not only did I not fit in with medicine because I was a nurse, I didn't fit in with nursing because I wanted to do something outside of the nursing field. So I think, you know, it's okay to carve a path for yourself, but keep those connections, keep people engaged. It doesn't need to be in your university or in your department. It can be outside and elsewhere. So that's what I wish someone had said to me outside. I found that as I went along through many sleepless nights. But now I can advise nurses, do that now. Build yourself a story, build yourself a package around you, and a team around you. And yeah, everything is possible.
That's great. We'll put the links to the BANCC and other organisations where nurses can look to for support and further information in the show notes at the end of this. So
okay, that's great.
Thank you again for taking the time out. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's great to meet you.
Join us next time on the podcast for...
Many things are fundable. You know, the standard, it's competitive. There is not enough money to do the research that's worth doing. So it's not just about having a good question and putting on a good show. You've got to put on a damn good show.
I'm joined by Professor Matthew Sides, who's Professor of Clinical Trials and Methodology at UCL. He talks to me about picking the right trial design, looking at it from the funder's perspective, as well as the importance of electronic health records for future research.